You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
I think I figured it out. Holy cow, Mark, grab a calculator and double-check my work real quick.
Okay, I've got it right here. I got a calculator. I even have a pen and paper.
Okay, all right, ready?
Yeah.
All right, now take and enter 8 p.m. in your calculator.
As in 8, colon, 0, 0?
As in 8 p.m., yes.
Okay, I got it, 8, 0. Okay, got it in there.
Okay, now add plus.
Plus, I got it. I was a math major. I know how to do the plus
thing.
Well,
that's perfect. Good. Yeah. How about Sunday night?
Sunday night.
And what did you come up with?
Equals? Simple Flight Radio.
Holy cow, I can't believe it. That is, I got that answer. You got that answer.
That must be right.
That must be right. We got Simple Flight Radio tonight. I'm Al Waterloo. Welcome to the show. Broadcasting once again live from the KPWK Airport here at the Signature Flight Support FBO.
And we have an empty ramp out there, although it's quite wet.
It was.
Yeah.
It is.
Citation just left here, but...
But you know what? Earlier today, it was actually quite filled. When I first walked in, there were a bunch of shiny or wet shiny business jets sitting out on the ramp, and I guess they all left. They didn't get the memo, apparently.
Well, you know what? I was supposed to fly today out to Cedar Rapids and saw, like, gust to 40, and I thought, you know what? Thunderstorms in Cedar Rapids, gusting 40 here. I think I'll... have my son drive or just listen to the show from Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, well, that's no big deal if you're a Learjet pilot or something like that.
Yeah, it's not the same as, I guess, the Cirrus. Actually, the Cirrus and our flying club, Leading Edge Flying Club, went flying today.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, make use of the license that he has, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we didn't say it before, I'm Al Waterloo, and with me...
Mark Heppner.
The mathematician, and we're glad to have you here with us tonight, live once again from the KPWK Airport. If you don't know where that is, pull out your 4Flight app or your Jep chart and look us up. It's a great place to have a show from, isn't it?
It is. You know, we had a great show last week, which I'm sure we'll talk about here. But, you know, to have this wide expanse, this big window here, and to see out in the ramp and the blue taxi light, I just love coming here every Sunday night.
Oh, totally. It is. It's nice. But we had a great, the Hilton Garden Inn took care of us last week from Oshkosh,
Wisconsin. Yeah, we'll cover a little bit of that, too, in just a minute. But, yeah, they did a great job and gave us the room. We obviously had a wonderful conversation with Adam Smith of the ALPA, Senior Vice President for the Center to Advance the Pilot Community.
Absolutely. And I think the outreach after the show was tremendous. Don't you think so?
Oh, my goodness. I was contacted by people looking for advice on how to start a flying club.
Right.
And from all over the country. It was pretty neat. Even during the show, we heard from a couple people, didn't we?
Yeah, we sure did. It was all some great... Great buzz that was generated about that. Hopefully, we can help people succeed in that aspect. And you know, there were some great pictures posted on Twitter during the show. And one guy posted a picture of Nantucket.
Yeah,
how about that? That was really neat on his Google.
Have you ever been to Nantucket?
I have never been to Nantucket, but one of the groups that reached out to us afterwards was the Nantucket Flying Association, and they were looking for some advice on how to set up their flying club, and hopefully. One day soon, we could go out and have a little chit-chat and a visit with them.
I hope it's sooner rather than later, although I guess as it gets colder, might be a little bit... Actually, we'd probably be the only ones there.
Yeah, well, we
maybe
could
not.
Be. But I think the tried and true are there during the winter months. But if you were supposed to pack your bag, what do you think you'd be packing?
I have no clue. I have not been checking the weather there. Maybe you could help me out tonight.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. Let's
as
see
always.
What's going on out on the famous island of Nantucket. Let's see.
Celsius. altimeter 3052.
That's remark, high pressure.
Thunderstorm. Information not available.
Yeah, hours operation are 0600 lock time until 2100 lock time. Common traffic advisory frequency is 118.3. Pilot output approach and runway landing is available on frequency 118.3.
That's good to know.
For this efficient Connect Cape approach on frequency 126.1.
You talk to Cape Approach?
2200 lock time, contact Boston Center on frequency 128.75 or Bridgeport Flight Service on frequency 122.1 or see another Nantucket VOR frequency 116.2. Notice standing there, runway 24, idle is active. Runway 15, reels out of service. Runway 33, reels out of service. Runway 33, values out of service. He's cautious for deer on or vicinity airport.
All right.
I think this guy could do a commercial for Jimmy John.
Memorial Airport. Automated weather observation 0206 Zulu. Wind 210 at 06.
Not bad.
Visibility 6. Mist. Sky condition clear. Temperature 1.2 Celsius.
Not bad.
2.11
I
Celsius.
I say we go get an airplane and go right now.
3052.
I don't fly in that kind of high pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind?
I told you to avoid being in high pressure situations, not to not fly in high pressure.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's a that would be a, it would be. I would call that a nice evening.
Yeah.
A little seaward breeze and the you know 50 degrees or so.
I'll take it.
That's not bad at all.
Such a beautiful part of the country as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But hopefully a flying club gets running on Nantucket. We know what to pack in our bags now. And all the other people that have reached out to us, hopefully we can go visit them as well.
I hope so. It's very exciting. Again, we had some wonderful conversation, and I think the energy that I just felt here 1 week after the show is huge. I'm going to call Adam Smith and tell him that he's already successful in his job. This is just going to get more and more momentum as we go forward. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, that would be if you were to post a tweet on that, you would finish it off with hashtag epic.
Hashtag, okay, I'll remember that. Now that I have my new tweet machine here next to me.
We go, nickname the bird's nest.
TBN.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that was good. But, you know, there's a... We gotta you have a tough job of always trying to make us laugh.
Yeah, right. No, I do.
You do. You do. Honest to God. You know, you really do. And I think... How are you going to make us laugh tonight?
You know, it's funny, and that's, I guess, what a Sunday night chuckle is all about, right? To be funny.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I'm not coming up with anything other than the standard stuff. I was almost ready to go back to my Santa stuff from first week in August, which really had you on the floor laughing. But thank God you and I were in a real-life situation last Sunday that, to me, is still making me laugh. And I hope our audience will partake as well. Let's go back to last Sunday.
Yeah. Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oshkosh, Wisconsin. We did a road trip so we could broadcast live with Adam Smith at the Hilton Garden Inn. And it had been warm. But when we came out to the airplane about midnight,
yeah,
which was parked on the private ramp for the Hilton,
yep,
we found, what did we find?
We found the airplane absolutely covered in thick frost.
In thick frost. Everything we read about, like, don't go flying if you find your airplane. So we say, no problem, we'll take the frost off. And so we start, and again, you got to picture this. This is true. You got three guys out there, no gloves, or at least I didn't have gloves, trying to clear the frost off from all the surfaces, the wings and the stabilizer and elevator and all that.
Yeah.
And, of course, after that, it wasn't working fast enough. So then we go into the hotel. You got anything can help us. So they handle us a little squirt bottle of window cleaner, which we knew not to put on the plexiglass, but we're squirting that, and they gave us a towel that immediately became soaked and cold. I'm getting frostbite.
Yeah, I was too.
It was unbelievable.
Mr. Flight Blog himself was getting frostbite himself too.
So what do we see across the street? We see a couple of gas stations. So we walk over, the light's on, the pumps are on.
Absolutely.
What state has pumps that are on but closes the gas station?
I don't know.
Wisconsin, obviously.
That answered that question.
So we go to one gas station. It's closed. We can't get in. We could get gas. I was ready to pump gas over the outside of the airplane. Then we go over to another one, same thing. So we come back. We get a cab. And they take us somewhere, Walmart, anywhere. And they take us to a Quick Trip. And then I bought a pair of gloves, which, by the way, lasted about 5 minutes before I had to throw them away. and we got the 50-50 antifreeze.
Yes, we did.
And you look like you were spreading gas can, like you were going to light the thing on fire all the way. And we worked forever clearing the frost, but we made the call.
We did it.
We did it, and then your headset stopped working, and my headset stopped working. I started thinking this is going to be one of those chain of events people will be reading about the next day. But it was a phenomenal flight.
It was a great flight.
Oh, my gosh. 2 o'clock in the morning, clear as day, along the lakeshore, heading back. It was just awesome. It wasn't worth much the next morning or later that morning. But for a Sunday night chuckle, at least, again, being there and seeing us, and if you guys in the listening audience can just picture all of us in the pitch dark with the flashlights going, trying to clean the wings and all the surfaces. It was funny.
Yeah. Well, just go to, you know, I guess stupid pilot trick number one is go to the nearest gas station and buy 50-50 antifreeze and you know, you got to make do with what you got.
That's exactly right. And I just said next time I'm bringing the TKS with me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Avoid the $500 de-icing bill, but oh well.
Yeah, that's the other thing we could have done.
Yeah, right. That was good though. That good learning experience. Good I woke up the next morning just laughing. I'm sure Todd wasn't laughing the next morning because
Funny you should mention. I just got a tweet from him. And he says, my gloves still stink. Well, Todd, I got to tell you, I threw my gloves away.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well, that's a good story and one to relive. And hopefully maybe by the time Oshkosh rolls around again, the antifreeze will be washed off.
Yeah, really. The owner sure hopes so.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, so that was today's 11-11-12. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. It's Veterans Day.
It is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day to all those veterans out there.
We thank you for your service, and we remember your service.
Absolutely. But do you know of anything special that happened on this day in aviation since its conception?
Absolutely. And there is a lot of things that happened on November 11th. But I've always been a fan of aircraft from the 30s and 40s. And in 1937...
Yeah.
You with me?
I'm with you.
The Messerschmitt ME, which I always like because ME is my initials, Mark Eppner.
Oh, nice.
Right? Yeah,
yep.
It is nice.
There
so
it
the Messerschmitt ME 109 Victor 13 sets a world speed record of, any guesses, approximate.
1937.
Yeah, world
speed. 200 miles an hour.
Not even close. You're too low.
Too low. That's, wow.
379 miles per hour.
Dang.
1937. That's pretty cool.
That is really cool. That is awesome.
So our hats off to them for setting a world speed record. But I have a feeling that you're not letting me going unopposed in the battle of history.
Nope.
So what do you got for
negative
me?
Well, I have I've got something that probably unfortunately beat your speed record. But in 1970, the British government agreed to fund the development of the Rolls-Royce RB211 turbofan. Now you're thinking, like, what kind of engine is that? Wow, great one, Al. But no, that's a pretty famous engine. It has a great sound. You can find it on one of the coolest airplanes out there, the Lockheed L-1011.
Oh no, okay, I'm with you.
74, 75, 76, even on a Russian Tupolev Tu-204. And you know what was really cool is when I looked this fact up, I remember it brought me back to one of my most favorite YouTube videos, and I got to play it for you right now.
Okay, I'm all ears.
You hear that?
Yeah, it's a smooth sound.
Yeah, that's a video of a Lockheed L-1011 TriStar taking off. Fort Lauderdale, I think it was going to Dallas. And listen to that purr.
It's humming. It's melodic.
Oh, it's real. It's awesome. It is melodic. Don't you think that, you know, it's kind of that engine's going to work, you know, keeping you alive up at altitude and all that, propelling you through the air, you know, at 500 knots or so, 450 knots. What a beat.
I wonder if we could put that on the Archer.
That'd be pretty neat. Well, that sound is pretty awesome. That's probably one of my favorite sounds in the face.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Good job.
Yeah. Good
nice
job.
Find.
Good job, British government.
There you go. And what year was that?
1970.
That's not that long ago.
No, not that long ago at all. But, you know, since that was back in 1970, did you do anything special in aviation this week?
Well, of course, last Sunday I count as this week, and we just described Oshkosh, which was great. But, you know, you and I happened to have the opportunity to take someone down yesterday to Champaign, Illinois. He was going to the University of Illinois game.
Right.
Which I thought was funny, because after we got there, the athletic director flew in from University of Minnesota and offered him, a U of I fan, a ride to the game.
Right.
But on our way back, it was very cool, because after we left Chicago, a bunch of thunderstorms started building, 38,000 feet. I mean, it was significant in convective activity. There was hail.
Yeah.
And coming back, we kind of headed north, and then we could see it. We diverted to the west and came the backside. And I just thought that was so cool, because we had a light show not too far off our wingtip of lightning and all that, but we were in the clear.
Right.
Right? No turbulence. We were in a very safe place, and I just thought, this is a cool experience, and it proves once again that with a little bit of flexibility, you know, a lot of the trips that we take can be made, even in the more, not unstable, but in this time of year in the Midwest, where sometimes...
The changing of the seasons.
There you go. The changing of the guard.
Absolutely. No, that was a fun little trip and good learning experience. I think all the people on board with us were pretty excited, as well as it was a really nice trip. I love going down to Champaign, alma mater U of I, and you got to see
wrong U of I.
No, that's the correct one.
No, black and gold. Go Hawkeyes.
Negative. But anyway, but that was a really great flight. But
what about you this week?
Well, this week I got to fly the King Air back out to Doylestown, Pennsylvania. That was really neat. Got to go on the Champaign trip, and I even got a really fun flight instruction lesson in with a student, and we finished off his hood time, which signified a great little achievement for him. We have now successfully completed all of the requirements for his private pilot certificate.
Oh, yes. We got to maybe plan a little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon.
Well, last when he soloed, I had a bottle of cold champagne.
Yeah, he told me he took it right before his flight.
Yeah. What?
Just kidding.
That was afterwards. So anyway, I got a good video of it. Maybe I'll post a picture of that. But that was pretty cool. But anyway, we got a very special guest in this house in the house tonight.
Absolutely,
we have Mr. Rod from Open Airplane, and welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you do anything cool in aviation this week?
Yes.
Okay. Next question.
Absolutely. Well, that was that. It sounds like you just had it. You want to give just a one or two sentence insight to what you did?
Sure. I got to deploy with the Civil Air Patrol out to the East Coast to photo reconnaissance in support of FEMA helping folks recover from Hurricane Sandy and the Superstorm.
Yeah. Awesome. So you got to see Nantucket from the air. That's pretty cool.
I did. I got a good tour of the East Coast.
Yeah. Awesome.
What did you go in? What aircraft?
It was a Cessna 182. Skylane Tango model NAV3, the G1000,
and I imagine with some of the weather that we've had, what was your worst headwind or tailwind, or best tailwind, I guess we'd call it?
Yeah.
Well, the tailwind going out there was okay. The headwind today coming back to Chicago topped out at about 65 knots on the nose.
Wow,
that might be. You know what? I think I'm going to Chicago by starting out east. And come from the other side. 65 knots. You must have been watching the cars down below going ahead of you.
Yeah, it was frustrating. We were trying to beat the weather in. We managed to do that.
And we're glad you did.
Well, welcome back.
Yeah,
glad you could make it tonight. And we got some cool things coming up in the show, talking with Rod about Open Airplane and some new exciting developments that he's got going on. But first...
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
All right.
I heard a little engine start in the background.
Oops.
So, Rod, actually, we should, not everyone is familiar with Open Airplane, even though it was mentioned last week's show. Adam Smith of AOPA mentioned it. And
oh, really?
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool concept.
Shucks.
So maybe you can give us a little bit of introduction to yourself and every bit as important of Open Airplane.
Okay, so the idea behind Open Airplane is we want to make renting an airplane as easy as renting a car.
That would be cool.
That sounds awesome. Well, that's pretty cool. So you have to be 25 to rent a car, right? No.
So we just think that everyone can benefit, the industry, the pilots, the community, if we remove some of the hassle and we can make renting of aircraft something that is more fun, it's easier, and we can make it safer and less expensive.
Absolutely. So how did this whole concept come about?
You know what they say about the best ideas come from scratching your own itch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a renter and always have been. And so really the idea was, how do we make a dent in the universe? How do we create something that creates a massive amount of value for the aviation industry and for the pilot community? That's really what we set out to do. How can we create more value for folks who have a pilot certificate? How do we make that certificate mm-hmm. in your pocket more valuable?
Right.
And one way we thought we might be able to attack that is how about if we make the pilot certificate something that doesn't turn off as soon as you leave your home base?
That's a pretty cool concept. But, you know, I've heard of that or thought of that before, but there's always kind of the obstacles that are thrown. As a matter of fact, I was in a fractional program for an SR-22, which I just loved, and one of the aspects of it was I could fly to any other city that had, it was an Air Shares Elite type thing, and so I could fly to Boston and say, hey, throw me the keys, and I'm already checked out. If it worked like that, how will it work, and what's the vision?
Well, it's interesting to bring that up, because we've talked to some of the fractional operators, and we've heard that essentially around 3% of their total flight time is sort of cross aircraft or almost like a code sharing. So mm-hmm. Someone who buys into a fractional aircraft in one city can go and fly that same make model of aircraft in another city. So I could commercial to the West Coast and then, you know, grab the keys to a similarly equipped aircraft and go fly that. That's 3%. So what if we just enabled all the aircraft out there that are available for rent in the same way? Well, if we created 3% more flying out of essentially thin air by reducing the hassle and creating an easy way to do it, we could really make a dent, and that would really total to some real money, some real flight hours across the industry. And so that's what we used as sort of our model for mm-hmm. For Open Airplane.
So obviously renting a car has been around for a long time, and this concept, I've heard it before, but it's never, excuse the pun, taken off. You know, what are the challenges? I mean, I can think of a few, starting maybe with insurance companies or things like that, but what have you run into also, and why is the time different? Why is it now the time for something like this?
All right. Well, first of all, I think that what makes this work today mm-hmm. in a way that is different from what has been tried before is two things. We today have the internet and we have desperation.
Desperation's a good word.
Right. So, I mean, the industry today is a very analog industry. We've been doing business the same way since probably the 1950s.
Yep.
You walk into any flight school or FBO, a lot of them you might find the same furniture that was there back in the 1950s.
Like orange and like wood paneling, or orange upholstery.
Yeah, so not only do you have the same furniture, but you have the same business practices. And I think someone who ran an FBO in the 1950s would be very comfortable with what they see out on the airports around the country today. And so we just think that it's time to sort of inject some digital tools and some of the technologies that we have. Everyone's got a smartphone in their pocket. They've got a tablet in their flight bag. And so we can use those things to change the experience of flying private aviation. And then we can use the desperation that I think we're all sort of suffering from in watching the flight hours go down year after year, to sort of get some people to try new things. Maybe
right.
when, you know, the economy was going gangbusters and their flight hours were going up, you know, quarter after quarter, changing their business model wasn't a big priority. But I think that we've got an opportunity now that folks are looking for a new way to do business, to change things and change things for the better and make it easier to fly.
Yeah. No, I think that's really neat. I think, you know, opening up a new experience, and one thing that I found that's really neat is using your pilot's license. And, you know, you mentioned turning your pilot's license turns off when you leave your home base. But you have a pilot's license that works literally anywhere in the world, right? And to be able to open that up to people, to give them an experience is just really, really, I think, wonderful. And I think you did this over the past week being out east. One thing that I did is I rented an airplane out in Doylestown and flew the Hudson River Corridor. And that's a pretty cool experience. Every pilot should experience that. And, you know, I think that having open airplane around to be able to open that up to people is going to be pretty powerful. You know, I think that but there may be some hurdles of trying to get people to latch on and insurance companies, aircraft owners, not owners, but at least flight schools and things like that. How's that journey been, trying to get people to join in?
Well, we started with the industry. So when I first started talking about the idea, a lot of folks really liked it. They thought, no, that'd be great. I'd love to be able to go rent an airplane and not have to do a local checkout and not have to spend 45 minutes on the internet and on the phone trying to, you know, track down an airplane and all that. But, you know, it's a good idea. It's been tried before. The insurance guys will never let you do it.
Right.
So we spent 7 months sort of in stealth mode with this idea, but, you know, we hashtagged it Project Awesome. And, you know, kind of didn't tell people really what we were up to for the first 7 months and working the idea, because we wanted to make sure that we could actually pull this off. And so we went to the insurance industry. If there's one innovation in any of this, it's not that a lot of pieces and parts of this business model haven't been tried. It's that we went to the folks who everyone expected would be the ones that would tell us no, and we actually talked to them.
Nice.
So we went to the insurance industry and with a plan, a very specific plan, on how to make open airplane work for the pilots, work for the operators, and work for the insurance industry. And they were willing to listen and give us a shot. We gave them a plan that everyone felt everyone could live with. For instance, a lot of operators would say, well, you know, I've got to give everyone a checkout. My insurance requires that.
Yeah.
So we asked the insurance guys about that, and they said, well, no, really. In most cases, the insurance policy simply reads, if they've got an open pilot warranty, which is one of the things we'll require for a network operator in our network, it simply requires that an approved pilot rent the aircraft. Only approved pilots can rent the aircraft. Well, that doesn't say that operator has to, you know, give you a local checkout and buzz you around the pattern for 45 minutes before you can,
right,
you know, take the keys and rent the same model Skyhawk that you flew last week in a different city.
Right.
So we said, well, what if we could make this better? And and we went to the insurance industry and got them on board. And once we had them on board with this concept, we, you know, got permission from the community by doing some some survey work and some research. We found out that, hey, why don't people fly away from home? Why do people sort of, you know, go to other places and then rent cars but don't rent aircraft?
Right, right.
Silly, right? And I spent, you know, $10,000 in 6 months to get a private pilot certificate, but it doesn't work when I leave my home base. Wait a minute, there's got to be a way to fix this.
Right.
And so we found out that 28% of the folks don't rent away from home because it's just hard to find airplanes.
Yeah.
You know, it's really frustrating. I mean, yes, a lot of operators have websites. Yes, you can go Google them. It's like 45 minutes of Googling and, you know, phone calls and emails and, you know, good luck, you know, necessarily getting someone on the phone sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but it's been a long time since I've called someone at the car rental place to rent a car. I just do that on the internet, but we can't do that with airplanes. So let's go fix that. So we'll fix the problem of being able to find the aircraft that are available, that are waiting for customers to come find them. And we're going to also solve the problem with the fact that people don't want to blow half a day and hundreds of dollars at every new city just to be able to, you know, exercise their privilege of, you know, flying an airplane as a pilot. So so if we could solve for, you know, 28% of the problem here and 51% of the problem there, we could actually make a dent in this.
Absolutely. And before my next question, actually, I just got a tweet from someone that said that we were breaking up our audio, and I suggested they refresh their screen.
Right.
And I got a response back that fixed it. So we had that last week happen, too. I don't know if it's a bandwidth issue, but if you're getting a broken audio, just refresh your screen, and that should fix it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So back to you, Rod, is I know when I'm traveling, one of the things that I'm thinking of in the back of my mind would be great to rent an airplane, but I'm not familiar with the terrain, the procedures, and it's almost maybe because I'm GA, a little, not, I'll call it intimidation. That may be too strong of a word. But what do you think is there to help the pilot that may just feel a little uncomfortable flying in a space that they've never done to feel more acclimated?
Again, the tools that we have today with glass cockpits and tablets, you know, with tools like 4Flight. I'm a big fan of 4Flight. We used 4Flight all week, you know, as we were flying around the East Coast. I've never flown around Cape Cod or Providence, Rhode Island. I've never flown above Manhattan before. Got to do all that, and I got to do that because I had access to information. We've got better access to information than we ever had. In particular, open airplane is going to solve that because we see this as a gap in tribal knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Flying out of Chicago Executive Airport.
You can say Palwaukee.
Palwaukee.
Tried and true.
You know, they have some local procedures. You know, if you start taxiing along that non-movement area here on the west side of the field, the ground controller is going to yell at you. Now, it's a non-movement area, and I can totally do that, but I didn't know that, right? Because I, you know, until I got to know the airport, there's all these little tricks of the trade that aren't documented in the AFD, aren't documented on the chart, aren't in the AIM or the FAR, but it's just how things are done here. It's local tribal knowledge.
Right.
And I think that's what you're referring to when you say I go to a new place and I'm not comfortable. So that becomes our job. And so one of the things that we've built into the open airplane experience is that we're going to give you the confidence to fly like a local. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to offer you a local procedures briefing, a standardized way that we capture and present to you all the tribal knowledge that would normally come from flying at that field, jumping in an airplane and flying with an instructor that's based there and then having him, you know, or her provide you with that. But we're going to do it in a way that we believe is better because we don't think that necessarily bumping along in a Skyhawk for 45 minutes is the best way to transfer that knowledge into your noggin.
Right.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I'd much rather get access to that in a logical, formatted you know, way on my tablet, and I can review that information at my leisure while I'm waiting there in the departure lounge waiting for my Southwest flight to take me somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? Or at home or, you know, I don't want to necessarily have to try to remember all the nine things that the instructor is going to try to jam into my head as we're, you know, flying that, you know, thrice around the pattern or, you know, or worse, you know, local checkout, because that's not a great way to sort of absorb that information. So let me get that information in a standardized, logical way before I show up to fly. I'll be safer. I'll be more confident. I'll have more fun.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. I just got a text message from a listener and said that, you know, it addresses the topic that we just talked about of, okay, local knowledge. But if let's say we're here in Chicago, right, where it's completely flat, but we go out to Aspen and run an airplane out in Aspen, you know, that poses another set of difficulties.
Sure, and that's an edge case. So, for instance, we're going to, in our operating agreement, we limit pilots who haven't completed an open airplane mountain flying course to airports below 5,500 feet MSL. So, yeah, there's, you know, flying in the mountains is an edge case.
Right.
Flying out to Catalina Island is an edge case.
Right.
Okay, we're not going to be able to solve for all those problems on day one, but gosh, getting off an airplane after flying down to Miami from Chicago, I want to grab a Skyhawk and fly to the Keys for lunch. The FAA says I can do it. My insurance guy says it's okay. Darn it, I'm going to go do that, and I'm not going to blow, you know, a half a day and a couple hundred dollars before I can sort of re-earn the right to turn my pilot certificate back on. I want to just rent the airplane. I want to pay a fair price for the rental of the aircraft. I want to get the utility that, you know, was sort of promised me when I, you know, showed up at that flight school on day one.
And the cool thing about all of this is not only are you getting more utility out of your license, but I would imagine the flight school or FBO or whoever's renting it, they see an uptick in business, right? So everyone's a winner. And GA, of course, wins too, and fuel sales and all of that.
Everything we've seen in the surveys that we've done of pilots and the conversations we've had with operators says that all the flying with open airplane will be incremental to the flying that happens today. It's not that I'm going to fly less with my flying club. It's not that I'm going to fly less with the rental outfit that I use. I might even own my own airplane. I'm not going to fly that any less.
Right. No.
Right. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to have access to more aircraft in more cities and more airports and be able to access those aircraft without the hassle and the expense that, you know, the industry sort of, you know, sort of created for itself. And so the numbers we see is that FBOs and flight schools that rent aircraft are currently chasing away 96% of their customers. So if we can get
a big number,
you know, so 4% of them show up and do a checkout, right? The other 96% go, "Bleh, I don't need to do this." So, you know, let's stop chasing away 96% of our customers. Let's make flying, you know, safer and, you know, somewhat hassle free, and then maybe the, you know, piston engine flying numbers won't keep going down 3% year over year. Maybe flight schools won't have to keep selling off aircraft. Maybe the pilot population won't continue, you know, to decline. So, you know, that's really the impact that we're going after.
Yeah.
And one, and I'm sorry to keep bringing up the challenges, but those are the things like...
Oh, sure. I'm happy to talk about those.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure. Thinking, too, you talked a little bit about you can get feedback after a pilot's rented from a place, but I know as part of a flying club, I'm always concerned, okay, are they going to treat the plane like they own it? Are they going to bring it back in as least as good a condition as they took it out, keep it clean and all of that? Well, how do you control these random pilots now all over the country that they do the right thing with that aircraft?
Okay, so there's a cold war going on, right? There's a cold war between people who rent airplanes and people who, you know, own airplanes.
Yeah.
And the folks, you know, the pilots are just, you know, exhausted by, you know, aircraft that aren't maintained, aircraft that are just, you know, they may be mechanically fine, but, you know, gosh, it'd be nice if someone, you know, wiped the windows down every once in a while, maybe got the bugs off the leading edge. Maybe the aircraft should be fueled appropriately before, you know, they show up to fly. You know, all that kind of stuff. You know, we've all had really great experiences renting airplanes, and we've had really not so great experiences. You know, we've had bad experiences, let's be honest, right? And on the flip side, you know, operators are sick of people, you know, bald spotting the tire and bringing the airplane back 2 hours late, so, you know, now we lost revenue on the next guy, and, you know, leaves FOD in the cockpit, you know, all that stuff, you know, stupid pilot tricks.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Right? So now, yeah. So what you end up with is you end up with a cold war. Well, how do we break the stalemate? So the way Open Airplane aims to do that is we're going to have a reputation system. We're going to have a reputation system that hopefully incentivizes people to bring their A game every time they show up to the airport. When you rent an airplane with Open Airplane, you will be asked to rate and review the airframe that you flew.
Nice.
How are the mechanicals? What's the interior? You know, is the exterior clean? All that stuff, right? So you can go and you can eat at a restaurant and rate and review it so the next person knows whether to pick that restaurant, but we can't do that. And I spend a lot more on a typical airplane rental than I do on lunch.
Yeah.
So that information is important to me. So let's go get that. So we're going to create a reputation system so pilots who fly the airplanes can rate and review the airplanes, and they can rate and review the operators that they rent from. The flip side to that.
Thank you. This is where I was going next, I think.
I'm gonna get there first.
Okay, good. You're our guest.
Is that the operators will rate and review the pilots who fly with them. Right? So the pilots now have a reputation that follows them. And now their reputation is at stake every time they fly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this happens everywhere else. It happens in the military flying. It happens in professional flying. You know, you're rated and reviewed by your peers constantly.
Right, definitely.
But in private aviation, there's this sense that, well, you know, if I piss off one FBO owner, I'll just go across the field and go rent from the other guy. And of course, the answer I always get from operators is, well, I talk to them and we make sure that we can blackball that guy. Well, you know, he's just going to go to the next airport and you probably don't talk to them, you know. And so that doesn't work very well. If it worked very well, these, you know, the bad apples wouldn't be flying anymore. They'd have to go buy their own airplane. But instead, we're going to create a reputation system that, you know, pilots are invested in and are incentivized to bring their A game and be the best renters you've ever seen. That's our job. That's the promise we're making to the operators, is not only are we going to bring you more pilots and pilots that normally would not come spend money with you,
right,
again, 96% of the time, but they're going to be the best renters you've got, because every time they show up to the airport, you're going to have the opportunity to rate and review them, so the next time they make a reservation request to the next operator, their reputation is something that they've, you know, worked on to protect.
Right. I think that's very valuable. It's almost like it's very valuable that it's a two-way street. It's almost like the old eBay feedback system, right? You know, because as soon as you start getting negative feedback, even if you have a 99.5% feedback rating on eBay, you start getting wary, and you want to do whatever you can to improve it and whatnot. So I think that will actually be a very valuable tool, I believe, in order to deliver the high quality renters as well as the high quality rentals.
Of course, I think about someone that gets mad and says something, and you feel like, wait a minute, I'm not a bad renter. I don't know what you're talking about. That ink pen mark on the seat was there before me, or
yeah,
someone else got sick. It wasn't something from me. So is there going to be some way that they can fight it, appeal a bad rating based on
bad ratings happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they don't happen, then obviously something's wrong. Either people are gaming the system, or people aren't flying the airplane, right? So good ratings, if it's a great airplane, the good ratings will outnumber the bad ratings, and people will understand. You know, you look at the ratings on Amazon, you look at the ratings on Yelp, you look at, you know, people know how to sort of sniff this stuff out, especially pilots. I mean, pilots have a nose for smelling BS. So we know that that's not going to go very far on our platform either. We're gonna manage that. We're gonna have folks dedicated to managing the pilot community, and then other folks who are managing the relationship with the operators, and I guess it's going to be up to me sometimes to, you know, break ties, but ultimately we know that pilots can sniff out BS from a mile away and from the hold, so we're gonna make sure that it's fair. The pilots who are good operators, the pilots who are conscientious renters, they're going to get good reviews, you know, for the most part, and operators will be glad to rent to them. The operators who do a great job with running their businesses are going to get great reviews, and the pilots are going to be banging on their doors to do business with them, you know, and the ones that aren't are going to kind of get self-selected out of the program.
That's okay. Survival too. Of the fittest.
Absolutely. The American way.
So, like the operators, you know, that we built a recruiting site for the operators that want to learn more about offering the aircraft via our platform. It's operators.openairplane.com. So, not very creative, but it's an easy URL to get to. So, operators.openairplane.com is a site we created so that operators could understand our program better and sign up to get in line to be onboarded into our network. And so, you know, we make the promise we're looking for the best operators in the business.
Yeah.
And how's the response been to date? I mean, I haven't seen much in terms of promoting it and all that. So I would think it's all social media and
our new news, right?
Yeah.
So it started pretty good. Once we sort of took the wraps off of Open Airplane back at Sun and Fun, we had about a dozen operators sort of track us down. Hey, sign us up. We're ready. Well, we haven't even given you our operating agreement yet. That's okay. We'll do this. This sounds like a good idea. Okay, great. That's awesome. So we had a really good response from us, kind of a small cadre of early adopters. The number of operators in our pipeline has doubled the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Because 2 weeks ago, we had a big announcement with our friends at Cessna.
Awesome. Let's hear about that. That sounds pretty cool.
So we were actually down at the Redbird Flight Simulation Migration Event, which is really a gathering of some of the smartest people in flight training and the aviation community. And there we were able to be announced that Open Airplane has become an endorsed partner of Cessna Pilot Centers.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Great job.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a big deal for us. It really primes the pump on distribution for us because the idea is that Open Airplane is something that Wichita looked at, the folks at Cessna, you know, in Wichita and Independence looked at, and they said this could really bring value to the Cessna Pilot Centers. So they're going to promote this to all the pilot centers, all the CPCs across their network to sort of promote and encourage all the CPCs across the country to participate in the Open Airplane network and standardize the CPCs into our program.
Yeah, nice.
Better than nice. That's pretty cool. Now we're starting to see momentum.
Yeah, that's a huge hurdle that a major player in, you know, I guess the in terms of aircraft rental, right? Cessna is probably the most popular, you know, I'm guessing it's, you know, the most popular aircraft out there to rent. Or in a rental fleet,
right?
And to have them on board like that's pretty awesome. Congratulations!
Thanks.
Have you approached the other manufacturers? And some of I'm thinking like Diamond has the.
We're having a lot of conversations. You bet.
Yeah,
that's
cool. I
guess
that was a silly question on my part. No. We've chosen to ignore everybody else, Mark.
Well, it's not an exclusive deal, but Cessna was the first to stand up from an OEM standpoint,
right?
And really make this part of what they're offering as part of their program, that is designed to help these, you know, businesses that are in their network, across the Cessna Pilot Centers, network and create value from that affiliation.
So what are their reactions? Are they pretty excited to be kind of a part of this, or I would imagine that they are?
The briefing that we gave down at Redbird was very well attended. And there was a lot of excitement. We had a lot of folks come up to us right afterwards and, you know, shake our hands and say, we're in, let's do this. Others had lots of questions, you know, the same, which is why I'm here to answer those questions. a few said, you know what, this isn't for us, which is fabulous. You know, it's not for everyone. If you're an operator that has all the aircraft utilization you can stand and, you know, you're raking in revenue and, you just wish you had more airplanes, because you've got more demand than you have, seats. That's great. Awesome. Don't change a thing.
What about flying clubs? You know, we have a wonderful flying club and we'd be open to the concept, but at the same point, we have a rule that says you got to be a member to fly.
Yeah, that rule is a friction point. So we're starting with aircraft that are, you know, out there for open rental. Have a sign on them or a shingle that says "Rent Me," Those are usually owned by flight schools or FBOs, right, which is why we kind of use this generic term of operator. And we hope that flying clubs will offer their aircraft into our network just like, you know, everyone else. All you need to have is have proper 100-hour maintenance. You have to have the aircraft properly insured on an open pilot warranty, which a lot of flying clubs have. Some flying clubs don't. Some flying clubs, you have to be named on the insurance, and you have to be a member of the club to you know, fly the airplane, and, you know, and you have to do the club's checkout and all that. That's great. But we're going to require that the insurance be right, that the maintenance be right, and the aircraft be available for open rental.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Of course, maybe there could be some kind of national effort, and maybe it comes from Open Airplane, where they're, because this rule that says you have to be a member, maybe there's a fee that somehow spread across. I don't know. Well, that's a problem to be addressed, or a challenge to be addressed, not a problem. We don't like to talk about problems here.
No, it's okay. The you know, there's certain kinds of flying clubs. So flying clubs and FBOs with aircraft rental are, you know, distinctly different business models.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if I want to get five guys together and form a flying club, And I just want those five guys to be flying, you know, the airplane that I own a share of, and I don't want anyone else touching that airplane. And I, because I want to know every time I show up to the hangar, you know, exactly who flew it last. That's great, and that's a great way to, you know, to run a flying club. That's not how all flying clubs operate. So I'm a former member of the West Valley Flying Club out on the West Coast, right?
Nice.
One of the largest flying clubs ever. I did my commercial flight training out there with Jason Miller, and I had to join the flying club in order to train in that aircraft. They wanted, you know, so they wanted money. They wanted me to be a member of their club, and they wanted to charge me for that. Whether I logged 1 hour or 20 hours, didn't matter. I had to pay to be a member of the club. How was I a member of the club? I showed up, I flew, and then I left. I went back to Chicago. I'm not a member of your... I'm not coming to your meetings. I'm not coming to your barbecue. I'm not helping people out. I'm not flying right seat when someone needs a safety pilot. I'm not part of your community. How am I a member? All I'm doing is I'm paying my dues and, you know, checking a box. So, you know, that's okay. But our model is we're going to take away all the pieces of friction that keeps people from flying. And the folks who want to, you know, list their aircraft in that model are invited to join the network. We think right now we're starting with, you know, aircraft that are at FBOs and flight schools. We absolutely want flying clubs to, you know, come into this, you know, and we'll figure out ways to do that later.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess the point taken from that is that, hey, you know what, depending on what kind of flying club you have, and I think this is an education issue, that this open airplane could work. I got a text message from a listener saying that he is going to present this idea to his flying club in southern Indiana.
Awesome. Thank you, Wes. Yeah. Operators.openairplane.com.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm on the site right now, operators.openairplane.com. It's actually a pretty cool site. It gives a good example of what they do, you know, how it could interact, how you interact, how the user would interact, right, with their smartphone or tablet, and, you know, kind of more or less the pricing structure and things like that. So it's a very well, you know, it's a pretty slick site.
Well, we just try to keep the message simple.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Simple flight.
Absolutely. And there's some good outlets there to reach out. Twitter. I know you guys are pretty active on Twitter and Facebook and all that, which is good too.
Absolutely. You can find us on Twitter at Open Airplane. You can follow us on Facebook. You can sign up with an email at openairplane.com to get updates, and there'll be more updates, some coming this week.
Right.
And then that'll also then let you know when the app is ready to launch. And then, like I said, the operators who are interested in joining the network can come to the operator site for more information.
Nice. So to clear this up real quick, I was under the impression that it's going to be a website, but there's also going to be an app, right?
Well, the website is an app, so it's a web app.
Nice.
How's that for
that's perfect.
Skirting the question? So we didn't want to leave anybody out. So what we're doing is we're building Open Airplane as a web app You'll go to openairplane.com, whether on a smartphone, on a tablet, or on a desktop. It'll work just fine.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's awesome. So when the person is actually using the app and, you know, going through the web and booking, how is it going to be pretty simple for them to reserve an airplane?
Yeah, it's literally you want to search for aircraft that are available based on either your local location with your GPS or by entering a city or an airport code. You'll see a map of the location of all the operators, and then you just simply find all the information you need to know about that aircraft, you know, the price per hour, the equipment, the ratings, reviews, the description, and you make a request for a booking right there. So whether it's, you know, on your smartphone or with your tablet, it's all done through the web app. You don't have to pick up the phone. You don't even have to send an email.
That's nice. You know,
that's simple.
Oh, it is very simple. You know what? It's nice because, you know, you go out to a lot of these FBOs and they have, I mean, let's be honest, they need to get with it because they have the paper schedule with, like, you know, they always have it, the pink eraser that has a hole drilled through it that's like so a piece of string is tied around it and it's taped to the desk. You know, so
we all know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for the airplane schedule, because, you know, it's all erased and, you know, and all that, but it's a nasty little white piece of paper or the white calendar schedule and all that. But
and we built Open Airplane to support that from day one. We're not trying to change that from day one. So we'll support that model. We'll support operators that have online scheduling systems, because our app will be just a reservation request. And then, so whether they're using electronic scheduling and they're hip to the 90s technology, or whether they're doing it the old-fashioned way, the piece of paper, we're not going to change the way an operator operates. You know, we're not going to change the fact that it's still the operator who dispatches the aircraft, or, you know, that none of that changes. We're just changing the experience for the pilot in terms of how they get to that operator's information and communicate with the operator. Also how they pay the bill.
Yeah.
So anyone stood there tapping their toes at the FBO after flying, waiting for the 22-year-old to fight with the credit card machine, right?
Mm-hmm. I was that 22-year-old at one point.
Right? So, I haven't checked out of a hotel in I don't know how long.
Yeah.
Right?
I just leave.
You know, they have my credit card on file, and I just leave. Well, we're essentially going to do that for the operators and for the pilot. So the pilot gets done flying. They enter their HABs on their TAC in the app, and they hit go. And then they walk in, they hand in the clipboard and the keys, and they leave.
Yeah.
Right? So we found a way to, you know, even make that part of it simpler.
Wow. Wow. I can envision all the neat things we can do and how many times even I would use it, because right now, other than a trip to Hawaii once where I hired an instructor because I didn't want to go through the checkout and said, give me a tour.
Yeah.
No, we don't do this, yet we all travel. We're in places. I'd love to be able to say, hey, I'm part of the network. Can I have the keys?
Yeah.
I want to go fly here.
Absolutely. There's a bunch of people blowing up on Twitter right now. And
yeah.
They're saying that, talking about where they would go. You know, I've been asking where people would fly to and all that, and so far, we've got a heavy Twitter population that would love to rent in Seattle. You know, go out there, fly in the San Juan Islands and things like that.
That would be pretty neat.
That's one of our top requests. Number one top request so far, because we've done some polling, we've done some surveys.
Yeah.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Vegas, yeah.
Awesome.
You know somebody out in Vegas.
I sure do. He was
your imaginary friend.
Yeah, Mr. Pat Brennan. He was he's show guest number one.
I don't believe he exists. Yeah. You keep talking about Pat Brennan. The man does not exist.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's out there. Believe it or not,
yeah, I don't believe it.
And he could be, you know, he's actually helped some of our club members when they've gone out to Las Vegas and helped them point in the right direction of flying with them and things like that. So
I always say a small community.
Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing some messages from our listeners asking about your timeline. When is this going to be something? You know, the one I specifically am looking at now about Chicago, but just in general, what is your timeline and when can we take advantage of this terrific offer?
Well, we can't really promise a date yet, but what we're really working towards is having people flying before the end of the year.
Nice. Wow, that's quick. For as many years as we've been trying to get there, now all of a sudden, okay, go for it. Make it so, as they say.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's a pretty exciting. So you've been working on this for the past year, and I mean that's a pretty cool little journey that you guys had.
Yeah, year plus.
Yeah, definitely. I know that last week when we were talking with Adam, he said that this is a great, you know, aviation's in a great spot for, I guess, startups, you know, for the entrepreneurial spirit. And you guys are definitely tapping into that, which is awesome.
Well, look at ForeFlight. Look at all of the things. So I agree with Adam. And, again, maybe because of the word you use, desperation, right, all of a sudden everything seems possible. But to me, it all just makes sense. It's not like we're coming up with earth-shattering new innovations. It's, okay, rent an airplane. Why not? It's a vehicle that moves a person from A to B. Why not?
And not a lot in our business model is new. We're stitching a lot of fairly old ideas together, kind of in a new way. Again, we first tackled the problem of what's the value proposition of having a pilot certificate in my back pocket. From there, we came up with a model that solved for that, and then we sort of grew a company around it and grew the business of how to do this around that seed. So it's kind of like the pearl that forms around the irritant, and the irritant was, you know, I want to fly, and then, you know, the business model sort of, you know, came together around that.
And with that, have you had enough planning to say what's kind of phase two, or are we really focused on phase one, and that what it looks like 2 years down the road, we'll worry about that.
I mean, phase one is let's get people flying. Let's get people flying single engine aircraft, you know, from starting at LSAs. By the way, the LSA population, kudos to the passion that the LSA drivers bring to this, because they're very vocal.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. So we're going to start with everything from two-seat LSAs up to high-performance single engine. You know, there won't be any multi-engines on day one. There won't be any seaplanes, you know. But there are a lot of different, you know, directions for us to go.
But complex aircraft as well? Retracts and...
Sure, no problem. Okay. Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, so you'll have a make and model. You know, we didn't really talk about the checkout, but, you know, the checkout's, you know, specific to make model. You know, a 172 is a 172 is a 172, unless it's a glass cockpit.
Yeah, right.
Right, and so we've been working with some really great people. You know, I've talked to the folks at NAFI, at SAFE. You know, obviously Cessna, as part of our partnership with them, will be working directly with us to enhance our operations, both our operations rules as well as our materials. So, you know, we've, you know, talked to them about, you know, our checkout and how to make that better and, you know, sort of refine it, and we'll continue to refine that. And so having, you know, some of the best folks in the industry working with us, you know, the folks from NAFI, the folks from SAFE, the folks from Cessna, you know, to come up with maybe what's not the best answer for everyone, but a great answer for a lot of folks is really what we're focused on, you know, at least in the beginning.
Right, definitely.
And with the aircraft like Cirrus, and I don't even know if the C-STIP designation is something that's used that much anymore, but I know I've seen that. So if someone says, I need CSIP training, which whatever, 10, 15 hours through a defined syllabus, that'll become part of what's necessary through Open Airplane?
Yeah, we built the checkout, what we call the Universal Pilot Checkout. And
UPC.
Yeah, exactly. We call it the UPC, yes. You got that. Thank you.
Mr.
Yes.
Acronym.
Thanks for playing along.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing. So, yeah, the UPC was built to be not airframe specific, but a standardized way to measure someone's competency to fly the airplane safely, right? So you fly, you know, you do ground, you do the air work, you either meet the standard or you don't. It's pass-fail, right? So it's tougher than what you're expected to do in a flight review every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this new value proposition we've got for you is you come to a member of the network. We standardize their instructor cadre to understand how to do this UPC. You get a UPC. It resets the clock on your flight review. So that's the endorsement you'll get in your book is an endorsement of a flight review, because our UPC includes everything that a flight review does. Oh, and by the way, it's pass-fail. It's not just let's do this until you sort of get it, right? So people will show up for a UPC, and you know, if they're having a bad day, they'll hook the ride. They if they don't fly to the standard, they will have to come back and fly that portion of it again to be able to demonstrate proficiency, right? Now, we're not talking about, you know, ATP standards here, right? You know, we're talking about private pilot PTS. And that's all we're asking for, because we know if everyone could just fly to this PTS for private pilot, the system works really well.
Remember when you used to be able to do that, Al?
Unbelievable.
Fly the PTS to the private pilot?
Yeah. I hope I still can. I don't know.
I hope you can, too. I hope I can.
I'm 250 feet off my altitude.
But if you can fly to the PTS, you can pass a UPC, and then you can go rent airplanes. That's really the idea, but the UPC is not aircraft specific in terms of what's in it. It's skills and whatever aircraft you're demonstrating that for, and then so you go you complete the ground, you complete the air, you get a flight review out of it. The insurance carriers who write renter's insurance have all agreed to give everyone who completes our standardization, they're going to whack up to 10% off your annual renter's policy.
Nice.
You get a discount.
Wow. That's awesome.
You know what? You've thought of a lot more than I would have.
So you've got now your flight review has been renewed. The clock is reset. You've got 10% off your insurance premiums for the year. Now you have access to a network of the same make, model aircraft all around the country.
There's a lot of I would say that there's a lot of hidden value in this, right? You know, think of a flight review.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're basically getting one every year, which I personally think flight reviews are should be every year, just because hey, they're meant to do real good things, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, plus you're saving money through through renter's insurance, and you're avoiding a costly checkout. I mean, there's a lot of hidden value here that, you know, when you put
and it's
add
not
up
so
the
hidden,
pennies,
but
it's
as
a
we
lot.
Had the conversation here, you know, obviously it's coming to light. Maybe we just didn't think of it, but
right.
Obviously Rod has thought a lot about it.
Yeah, definitely. I got a couple questions here from a user right now. He's chatting with us on Facebook. He was asking, you know, maybe helicopters and seaplanes down the road, but I think for right now we're just sticking with single engine airplanes until this thing can get rolling. But I think more importantly, he wants to know if you don't pass or initially pass one of the UPCs, does that go against your pilot record?
No, so it's not we're not the FAA.
Right.
Right, so there's no FAA record of a universal pilot checkout. We're not there to fail anybody. We're just there to check to see if you've got the proficiency across the standardized battery of things we know pilots need to be safe. If you have I've been taking check rides on an annual basis as a standardization program with the Civil Air Patrol for the last 11 years. I've hooked a check ride. I was being sloppy when it came to crosswinds that day.
Yeah.
He's like, look, you're not flying to the standard. I went, I got retrained, and I came back, and I got it done, and I went back to work. So we think that because it is a pass-fail event, that we're going to recommend pilots actually go and sharpen up before they show up to the flight school for the UPC. So if you haven't done, you know, emergency procedures or ground reference maneuvers, I mean, when's the last time you did a 180 power out? Yeah, you probably did that at some point during your private pilot training. When it's the last
1976.
Time someone, you know, okay, it's been 19 months, you know, since pilot A did that. But it might be a skill they need tomorrow, right? So if you can just go and refresh that stuff And then prove that you can fly to the standard once a year. As my friend Steve Tupper says, it's great kill proofing.
Right? Nice.
Kill-proofing, yeah. So to follow on Al's question, though, if someone fails, let's say they get the hook, as you say, three times, and on the fourth time's a charm, is the number of attempts ever shown, and do you start to question somebody, or no? It's when you pass, that's all you care about.
Yeah, so there are folks who are going to get tired of paying for the UPCs, because they're still going to be paying for the flight. They're going to be paying for the rental. They're going to be paying for the for their instructor's time, right? And a UPC is a very expensive way to get instruction. So most people probably won't do that. People will probably, in most cases, kind of self-select out and just decide that renting via open airplane isn't worth the hassle, right? They don't need it. They're perfectly happy with the level of proficiency they already have, and they just won't, decide to jump through this particular fiery hoop. Now, this particular fiery hoop has a really big, juicy carrot on the end of that stick, right? You know, instead of the FAA having to go and smack us all upside the back of the head with the regulation stick, we're creating sort of an industry-wide carrot that says, jump through this one fiery hoop once a year, you get the benefit of having that confidence that you're still flying to the standard, and any sort of bad habits that you've collected over the past 12 months have been weeded out of you. And now you get to go, use your credential.
Right. Why would you call it a fiery hoop?
I don't know about you, but when someone's in the right seat checking boxes and telling me whether I did something right or wrong, that's stressful.
Yeah.
Right? So, but, and that's okay. It's a good kind of stress. It's like taking your vitamins or going to the gym and feeling those sore muscles later. I know that it makes, for safer pilots. Pilots that do this kind of standardization see a 60% lower accident rate than pilots that don't.
Yeah.
Right? So, hey, let's all be safer pilots. Let's save a bunch of money.
What a concept.
I haven't heard that in aviation in basically forever, as long as I've been in here.
Oh, my God, new thinking. Yeah. We just got a tweet also, people asking about international, most specifically Canada. What are the thoughts on expanding to that point?
We want to make sure we can prove that the model works here in the U.S. market.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that we have the Open Airplane CA domain already registered.
Aha.
Very
good. You heard it here first, folks.
Absolutely. Well, there's some pretty cool and very exciting things. I think that this will definitely, Open Airplanes, we're going to open.
Do exactly what
the name says.
Exactly.
Open up airplanes to a lot of people.
So did you, when you asked the question of Rod, did you answer it for yourself as to where you would want to take advantage of this? I'm not going to let you say Las Vegas.
I said the L.A. area.
Okay.
I don't know. There's something. I really want to fly out of Van Nuys and get hear the magic words, clear to land on 16 right.
Yeah.
That's on my aviation bucket list.
I did my instrument training out of Van Nuys. It's a beautiful part of the world to fly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I know it only through 16 right, the documentary, which I love and see a lot of the time. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think I would... it's funny. I'm not thinking of bucket list items, but I was just actually talking today with a relative, and they had a need. We're going to do Thanksgiving in Iowa, and this is actually my daughter-in-law's sister is going to be coming in, and she has to work in retail, and she's looking like to come in from Minneapolis. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I drive to Iowa for the Thanksgiving week or something, and then to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to grab a local airplane, fly up to Minneapolis and pick up her sister and bring her down for dinner and then take her back so she can make the midnight. That would be cool.
That would be really cool.
So it's more the concept than the location to me is where I see I could make use of this. And as I travel the Midwest or anywhere, it just adds so much to the day. I want to take a trip. I want to see what Kansas City looks like from the air.
We'll get there. Yeah. Not on day one. We'll
work with you.
We'll get there as quickly as we can.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Rod, where would you like to rent out of and use Open Airplane? Are you going to be a user of it?
I'm not just the co-founder, I'm also a customer.
Your hair is looking pretty good today. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I've got that headset hair thing going today after over 8 hours in the cockpit. For me, I've got my dad, who's a snowbird of sorts. You know, he's in Michigan during the warm part of the year, and he's in Florida. And so while he's in Florida and I go down to visit him, I'd love to be able to rent while I'm down there. So yeah, I'll be doing a lot of flying. I also have, this evil plan that, you know, I need to get checked out in the aircraft that are in the network. So, it's really all just an evil excuse for me to fly more, great airplanes.
Absolutely. Well, that's awesome. I think it's going to be a great journey. And, there's, from a flight instructor standpoint, I really like this idea of the UPC. You know, and that's kind of why I was asking about it being a fiery hoop, and not necessarily the way that it's being said, but it's just, well, you said, Rod, that it was that's a good kind of stress. And I think that is very good for all of us as pilots to experience every once in a while and kind of maintain this, you know, proficiency. And I think it will also allow us to maintain proficiency in all different types of airspace and terrain, you know, that we never have gotten to experience before, which I guess makes us more well-rounded of pilots, which, you know, I'm all about.
You know, we have, and we've talked about this on other shows, like Al has taken me through the IFR of Chicago, I Follow Roads, where you just don't, okay, I'm going to go to this waypoint and all this. He says, okay, take Meacham Avenue south, pick up the Eisenhower, go to the United Center, turn left. I mean, that's how he gets me to fly Chicago. And what it's done is, I don't know about proficiency, but there's a comfort level of doing something new. And it's a muscle memory. And I can see if I start using a service like this, and I'll say, yeah, so it's another city. And I mentioned I think intimidation was the word I used and probably the wrong word. But just to feel comfortable going to a new place and experiencing and doing the thing that we're all so passionate about, flying an airplane. I think that's really a cool side benefit.
Yeah, I was showing you the interface to Open Airplane earlier,
yep,
and you noticed that we have a little swipe for when you make the request for the aircraft to just go ahead and request an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not that you have to bring the instructor because you're checked out to fly the airplane, but maybe you want to go ahead and, you know, add an instructor to your request because you just want the moral support. You
right.
want the local, you know, knowledge. You want someone to maybe deal with the aircraft details while you know, take a quick business meeting, or you take care of family stuff or something like that. So, we're not necessarily disenfranchising instructors here. It's just that let's use the instructors, you know, when they're, you know, in a more productive way.
Highest and best use.
You know, let's you know, have the instructor sit there for 45 minutes of, you know, sort of wasted avgas while I, you know, go around the pattern three times. So let's do that. You know, it's our job as part of our standardization program to get pilots comfortable with the idea of flying in new places.
Yeah,
those are obviously the things that are going to be focused on in the UPC.
Right.
You know, Section 2 of the POH is going to be the big part of the, you know, the
which is what, Mark? Section 2 of the POH. What is Section 2? well, where's the beep button?
we got him to swear. Sweet.
Abnormal procedures?
Nope, negative.
Son of a gun.
This is something I like to go over. I always start off my checkouts to any airplane with an introduction to the POH.
Oh, my God. You've embarrassed me in front of all my listening public.
Oh, my. This is pilot confession.
I'm happy to help.
Let's hear it. Call. Phone a friend. Phone a friend, Mark.
Okay, Rod.
So Section 2's all the limitations and
okay,
the you know, specifics on that airframe. So, you know, the difference between a NAV 3-182 and, you know, that R model that you flew, you know, last week, you know, are going to be in Section 2.
You know, what's funny is, to this point, I didn't know all POHs were standardized. I know I go to Section 4 for the weight and balance. I know the systems and description on my airplane,
yeah.
Section 7. So I know some of this, yeah. But I have to confess, I didn't know every POH.
But I'm going to tell you the truth. I mean, this isn't something that just, you know, I magically sort of came up with, right? I'm not this, the focus on Section 2 actually came from Kirby Ortega, who's the chief pilot assessor. Right. So, questions, all these, I've been learning a massive amount, as part of this process. One question I get is, okay, how are we going to check out G1000 pilots, right? There is no real certificate. Ta-da, I have a G1000. I'm good at using a G1000. I'm a safe G1000 pilot, right? How do you do that? What's the secret sauce there? Again, we went to our friends at Cessna and we asked the question, what's your trick? Because you guys are doing this all day long. Well, here it is. If you can show up, hop in the airplane and fly, and let's say you're a VFR private pilot, right? And you tell us you're good at the G1000. You've got lots of experience. You're fine, right? Great. Go ahead and load and activate a flight plan in flight.
Whoa.
That's the litmus test, right? If you can do that in flight, you can probably do everything else that needs to be done in the G1000. Now, if you're stumped by that, it probably means you need some more training, right? So it's simple little litmus tests that give you sort of an idea of the competency of the pilot. We have some things buried in the operating agreement that we're going to ask you about when you do your checkout. Did you read the contract? Yes. Great. What is X? If you can't answer that, you know what? You probably should go read the contract again, right? So we're doing this all for your own good.
Yeah. No, and that's very practical knowledge and experience that needs to be demonstrated. How often would a Chandelle... what are you going to be? How often are you going to be doing Chandelles? What are you going to be doing more, Chandelles or loading a flight plan?
Everyone just uses the direct to button, right? Everyone, on any GPS they get, they just direct to, except for when they have to, plan their flight around complicated airspace.
Exactly.
Right, but it's not that it's the matter of loading the flight plans is all that important. As much as it's indicative of your total systems knowledge and your ability to operate, that very complicated, very powerful system, right? So, if you're only using the direct to button in the G1000, then you're not using all the automation that is there to help you be a safer pilot and have a more enjoyable flight. So it probably means you need to go spend some more time, training with a local flight instructor. And you know what? That means more proficiency. It means safer pilots. It means more flight instructors flying more hours, making more money, fewer of them, deciding to leave the business, more oil changes, more engines, fewer airplanes being sold off.
I think he's trying to save the world.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Or at least the industry.
Just my favorite part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We're in violent agreement with you.
See, I think that's really cool because last week we touched on it with Adam Smith. I brought up a point of, hey, aviation needs to, not only grow in pilot numbers, but I think the best way to grow is to become a more quality industry, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I had a good phone argument the other day with a good friend of mine, and he thought aviation should get smaller, it needs to be elite and things like that. But I thought, you know what, aviation may need to get smaller initially just for a quick breath and work on the fact of it needs to be, work on itself to get better. And then that, when aviation is better, people from the outside are going to look in and be attracted to aviation just because of what's going on.
And you just used the key phrase, attraction, and Adam talked to us last week about the difference between attraction and retention, and we need to do more of the attraction. And it's things like open airplane that speak value, because otherwise it's, I'm going to spend X number of $1,000s to get a pilot's license, and what am I going to do with it? right? And so if you can talk about the value, not necessarily dollar for dollar, but value for value, you know, now it all of a sudden becomes a more enticing and positive thought.
I think one of the things that drives my thinking around this is the difference between value and price.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. How much does it cost to get my pilot's license? I had someone here at Chicago Executive ask me the question, which flying school should they get their certificate at? I said, well, which one do you think is going to give you the best value? I said, well, this guy over here is way cheaper. I said, you have to ask yourself what approach is going to give you the most value. Because I don't know about you, but you're talking about flight training, right? I don't necessarily want the best deal I can possibly get on LASIK eye surgery.
Right. I was going to say for heart surgery. Yeah, which one's the cheapest cardiovascular surgery?
Exactly. Oh, look, there's a 2-for-1 coupon. Awesome. I mean, you're being taught to, you know, hurtle through the sky in a, you know, aluminum or composite airframe at 150 miles an hour. Maybe you should really invest the right amount of time and money in that. So I just think about it in terms of value. It's not about necessarily making it cheaper. In our cases, yeah, you're going to have to go do a checkout, or you have to go train in order to be able to pass the checkout. But the value then comes in, well, what can I do once I've done that? Right? What's the, you know, there aren't going to be any students coming into open airplane, right? Everyone's going to have a certificate, either a light support or above. Because what we want to do is we want to be able to give people another reason why they're going to finish their training, why they're going to, gut through it when they get to a learning plateau. Well, you know, if the only reason to do it is because it's there, because they started their training and they want to finish it, great, those people are always going to finish it. But the people that, you know, need one more reason to stick around and keep showing up at the airport for their lessons, you know, and keep proficient and keep their medical current and keep, participating in the community. You know, we just hope that we're one small, you know, good reason to keep doing that.
Anyone that asks me how much does it cost to learn how to fly, I say, why, are you going to stop after you get your license? So to me, it's not how much the cost to learn how to fly, it's how much does it cost to fly, and then I ask the follow-on question, how much does it cost not to? Whether it's for business, in a blog I wrote called How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, I talk about the value I get from it just in seeing family, opening the world, and it comes down to the smile on my face, and I say it really does come back. To me, it would be more expensive in terms of loss value if I weren't to fly.
Yeah.
Right, just my personal evaluation system, my smile is worth a lot, and I smile every time I fly.
Absolutely. If you don't, yikes.
Yeah, yikes.
Yikes.
I just try to sound cool on the radio.
You get that deep ABS. Yeah.
Yeah, my theory on this is that every flight, my goal is to sound cool on the radio.
Well, it's good to have goals.
Because if you don't sound cool on the radio, that probably means that something's going wrong. If you're kind of umming and unning and your voice is going up an octave, you're probably behind the aircraft. Something's gone wrong. Something's not going to plan. You're not happy with the flight. So if I can just pull off sounding cool on the radio, that means that my flight is going well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a. It's funny. There is when I used to fly for the airlines, you'd always hear. It was always. I don't know why, but it was the Cactus. The call sign Cactus. You know what airline that is?
God, no, I'm not going to even say after my start tonight.
Oh, yikes! US Air. Oh. Yeah, but anyway, they. It was funny. They would always miss radio calls, and I don't know why. But
isn't that Northwest? Know, when they're flying over Minneapolis by 80 miles,
that's too soon. But no, they would go on. You know, the controller, it was hilarious. They missed like three calls or a frequency change or something like that. You know, the controller's like, you know, Cactus, blah blah blah, contact, blah, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Kept saying it, and then finally the controller came out there and said, McFly, anybody home, McFly? And then they came back on. They're like, Cactus, da 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 da, we missed you. You know, it's just the same thing, the low, deep, nothing's bothering us.
I heard a Wookiee on guard today, so my day is complete. We're cruising along over New York State, and all of a sudden we hear a Wookiee growl come over on 121.5. I don't condone it, but damn, it was funny.
Actually, the funniest call I ever heard was here at Chicago Executive, and it was obviously a female student taking her first flight. Because all of a sudden you hear, as she was rotating, she pushed the talk, and she started giggling and screaming, "This is so cool!" And it was, you could hear it all the way.
No, that was actually me.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to say anything.
I do that on every flight.
That's why it needs to sound cool. Yeah. Oh, that's a riot.
Yeah. So we always have a little session here, and I'm going to call you in on it. It's called True Confession. We're going to get a little away from Open Airplane, and we're going to ask you a true confession, something that didn't kill you, but that you're not necessarily proud of, that you did in the cockpit. And for those of us just listening, I want to paint a picture. I've got a man in front of me. He's just stretched his leg out. His hand is on his chin, and he's thinking, and the eyes are going like crazy. Let's see. I think we put him on the spot.
Uh-oh.
Maybe while he's thinking.
There's just so many.
Well, why should you be any different than the rest of us?
The UPC will fix it.
Yeah, right. Maybe while he's thinking, I should ask you.
Okay. So this was a bad instructor moment, and
good CFI, bad CFI.
Yeah, good to bad. Well, yeah, this is a. I condoned maybe a bad behavior, and the more I look back on it, the student said something, and I was like, "Oh, that's okay." And I sat there and I said, "You know what? No, it's not okay." That was pushing the prop lever forward on final in a Piper Dakota, and we forgot to do that flying into Champaign. And it's always one of my mental checklists and everything. And I forgot to remind the student. It was his first flight flying a constant speed prop. And I forgot to announce to him. When we got out of the plane, he's like, "Hey," he's like, I'm really ticked off. I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "I didn't put the prop forward, and you didn't remind me." And I'm like, "Oh, my goodness." So I was just like, "Okay, I'm sorry, that's okay." But then I look back on it, I'm like, "No, that's not okay. You know, if you forget it once, you can forget it any time." And
you're human.
Yeah.
You're just like the rest of us. How exciting.
It?
This is good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, anyway, Rod, you've had time to think. Your turn.
His finger's still in his mouth.
Wow. I'm just going to make the assumption that no one from the FAA listens to the show.
Jim, you want to get off the show for a minute?
Or that the... private pilot, flight 3 after getting my certificate. I'm in college. I joined the local flying club there, and I'm taking some friends flying. And I had a runway incursion. It was one of those, you know, it was a towered airport, very convoluted airport diagram. I was cleared onto a runway, and I turned left instead of right. This is quite a while before runway incursions became a real focus for the
right.
FAA. And back in the day where you just kind of got yelled at on the frequency and
right,
nothing
right.
else sort of happened. So that's pretty much what happened. So I, instead of turning one way, I turn the other, and before you know it, I'm essentially, instead of back taxiing toward the runway I needed to go to, I am now sort of back taxiing toward the approach end, you know, of a runway that has no more taxiways. I'm stuck there. Problem is, they've got another airplane who is now rolling out onto the final of that runway, and I'm in his way. Well, okay. So, in my infinite wisdom at age of, 21 or 20, you know, when I did this, you know, I thought, well, if I'm on the runway that another airplane is going to land on, at least I shouldn't be on the center line anymore. So, that was my best answer at the moment. I couldn't call, I couldn't phone a friend. So, I literally just kind of made a beeline off the center line and off to the side and into the corner. I kind of hid there, so that
cloaking device.
So he could at least land, you know, normally if he didn't go around, because I just didn't, I wanted to make myself the smallest target possible. And yeah, so now I think back to that moment. I, wow, really? The only real sort of comment I got from the controller is, well, at least he got out of the way. At which point I 180'd and, you know, got out of the way. He didn't even have to go around. I was actually able to get off before he had to go around, and, you know, it was a non-event. I didn't get in trouble. I didn't get yelled at more than the fact that I got embarrassed. You know what the Air Force says, you know, better dead than embarrassed, but I just move on.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's my confession.
All right, well, hey, awesome. Thanks for participating.
Yeah, Mark, you're the only one left.
Well, I have one of those things where I'm thinking through so many. I think the one that bothers me the most, because some things you just say was a mistake, is I may have mentioned it. I did put too much fuel on board on a trip, and I was changing a lot of airplanes. I was flying the Cirrus a lot, and then I was in a Piper Arrow, and then I go into an Archer, and I'm Cirrus, I'm back in a Piper Arrow, and I gave a fuel order of tabs plus something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm rolling down the runway and pulling back, and I mean, it was all fine, but she wasn't performing.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I did the little numbers in my head, and I said, oh, my goodness. You know, I had a brain fart, and I called for the wrong fuel, and they put exactly what I told them, and we were a little bit overweight. You know, I'm sure there's a little play in it, but it was one of those that even to this day I think about, and I get mad at myself.
You ever defueled an airplane?
I have not.
I've only had that happen once.
Yeah.
And we were flying a Cirrus from the Midwest over to the West Coast. I've done some ferry flying. Ferry, Steve. He always asks. Spell ferry. And we got to Moab, Utah, and we asked for 24 gallons, 12 in each. Because we were really limited on weight. We had, you know, all this crap in the airplane after coming out of Oshkosh, and, you know, and so we needed to, you know, be very careful. But it was like 109 degrees on the ramp, so we didn't sit there and watch the guy fuel the airplane. We go inside where there's air conditioning, and the kid comes back, and he goes, okay, you know, very proud of himself. You're all set. I've got you topped off.
Oh,
wait a minute. It's 109 degrees with the density altitude, which would ensure that we would lift off, bumble along in ground effect, and be splattered across the first mesa we encountered. And we my buddy just was so mad. I had to, like, talk about, like, he didn't break the airplane, just overfueled it. And, can fast forward to the golf cart full of 5-gallon jerry cans, siphoning gas out of the aircraft so that we could actually depart that day.
Did you at least have a pump, or did you have to?
Oh, no. This poor 17-year-old ramp, he ended up going out there and siphoning that fuel out himself.
Oh, my God.
Managed not to get sick, managed not to actually ingest any fuel or anything like that. He did it safely. But, you know, the poor kid just was miserable. You know, he'll never overfuel an airplane.
See, that could be his true confession.
Wow. Yeah, that, seriously, he could. There was a time at the airlines that, you know, believe it or not, it was not uncommon to be overfueled. And it's not because of mistake or whatnot. There's always, I think airlines are a game of logistics, right? You know, that you have gate swaps, airplane swaps, and, you know, all this information changes all at the same at one second. And, you know, so you took you have an airplane that's going from New York to Washington D.C., right? And so it's been fueled for one load, and then all of a sudden you get an airplane swap. And that airplane was supposed to go from New York to L.A. So it's got the gas to go to L.A., but now it has it's only going to Washington, D.C. So it was common to get overfueled in the airlines, believe it or not. And how do you think that they resolved that problem?
Dump fuel in the air?
Negative.
Because they were over gross weight for landing?
Yeah. So you had to go out and burn fuel on the ramp.
Actually, you know, this is, a couple years
ago.
Does
the crew get paid? You guys clock in every time the door closes, right? So,
yeah.
So that's okay.
Yeah. So sometimes if you had a captain that was really conscious about making money, he would go out and burn fuel at the slowest rate possible.
You know, I mentioned a couple years ago I went to Hawaii when I flew that 172 around, got the instructor, but it was for a company event. And there was a group of people that were coming from Phoenix to Maui. They took off. They got to the ocean front on the California side, and they had a problem, and they couldn't continue. So they went back. They went back to Phoenix and circled for at least an hour over the airport to burn fuel so they could land and get the problem fixed.
Wow.
I never heard of that.
Yeah,
I thought you would just dump it, but no, we just got to fly it off here and over the airport.
Yeah, there's some airplanes that don't, the airliner that I flew didn't have the capability of dumping fuel, so you had to burn it.
Well, you got that only that choice.
You're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
By the way, this is totally off the subject, but have you seen the movie Flight with Denzel Washington?
I have not.
I saw it last night.
Okay, everyone who saw the movie on Twitter listening, send us your review. Go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hashtag that simple flight, and I'll be excited to hear your thoughts on that. Yeah. But anyway, we're going to open up to one of our favorite segments of the show. But first, before we get there, real quick.
Mark Kepner on www.simpleflight.net.
Well, anyway, that was a little faded, but it's Hangar Talk.
It is Hangar Talk, and that's why I was trying to get into a little True Confessions and all that. I was taking you in there, kind of marshaling you in.
Yeah, that's what they call a sucker hole.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's there was one question that was actually brought up, and this was an email from the show, but In the spirit of it being election season being over and all that, we have a president that's been determined to go into office again. The question was brought up, what do you think the new administration or current administration is going to, what effect they're going to have on aviation for the next 4 years?
Actually, the first thing that comes to my mind is with user fees, right? And I know President Obama has been in favor of it, something I'm not in favor of. So that's my biggest fear, even if it is just turbine aircraft. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's small battles that will have to be won with that. I'm kind of curious to see how all this aviation or the pilot bill of rights and, you know, this new regulation for airlines comes through. You know, I don't, and this is probably pretty ignorant of me, but to be honest with you, I don't really know too many of the pressing issues. You always hear user fees. That's kind of the buzzword around legislation. But I don't really know too many of the other hot-button issues other than the things like that.
Well, they don't seem to be on the radar screen. That just, I think, shows what a small population we have. It's just not deemed important to talk about as issues. So,
yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but it's kind of
interesting. Al knows how I feel about this.
All right, let's let everybody else know how you feel about it.
You know, so Al and I had we're sharing some beverages and you know, we had this conversation around how, you know, if we allow our community of, you know, people who are interest in aviation shrink to the point where we don't matter anymore, where the dollars aren't there, where the economic impact of aviation no longer merits attention, and we're sort of hurtling down that funnel now, it won't matter how much money is spent or collected or used
to lobby Washington, because we just won't matter anymore. Washington follows the money.
Right.
And so I still come back to the mantra that the only thing that can save aviation is actually aviating. Flying airplanes.
Absolutely.
Burning fuel, you know, which leads to, you know, running 100 hours and paying mechanics and instructors to teach the pilots and the controllers to, you know, controlling the weather briefers and the, you know, that whole ecosystem is disintegrating and shrinking, and to the point where it no longer will be able to, you know, maintain, you know, cohesion, and it'll just vaporize. One day it'll just go poof.
Well, and listening to Adam Smith last week, he talked about how much he paid over in Europe, and it's, I can't imagine, four times the cost or whatever he said, $14 a gallon for fuel. It's just ridiculous. And then it becomes a tornado effect, if you will, or just going down the drain.
Right.
There's nothing you can do to save it, because then just people can't afford it.
You know what's really interesting about that, and I'm glad you brought that up. So earlier today I was on the phone with the Cirrus sales guy that has the Boston/Nantucket sales territory.
There comes Nantucket again. That's
yeah, how about
how many times have we talked about Nantucket?
Oh, they got some cool things going on, and hopefully we'll talk about those a little bit later. But he mentioned that there's a lot of guys out in that area, the North, the New England area, and Nantucket area that, you know, are from Europe. They vacation here for half the year, and then they go back to Europe. But they buy airplanes in the United States and keep them here in the United States, because it's a lot cheaper than for them to fly it back, operate them in Europe. So here's people that live here part time. They have airplanes here part time, or well, full time, and just solely on the principle of what you just said and Adam touched on last week. It's just so expensive.
Gosh, if there were only a way to rent aircraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We should hope somebody starts something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I've spent a decent amount of time in Florida, and I look at the flight schools there, and how many people go there from international sites. They come to the United States to get the private ticket, the commercial ticket, whatever.
Right.
Because it's affordable. And that, yeah, you know, that's what my biggest fear is, regardless of who's in charge of the country or not, is we cannot let it get to a point where...
Well, but that's already headed, you know, that way, and has been for a long time. So I think there was recently some research published around the cost of aircraft mapped against the volume aircraft built.
Right.
And if you look at it, it's pretty logical. It seemed, you know, I looked at the graph, and it sort of jumped out at me that the more aircraft that are built, the less expensive they were, right?
Yeah,
right. And well, that,
what a concept.
So makes sense, right? Yeah. So if we get to the point where aircraft are no longer built in such volume that it, you know, it, you get quantity, you know, quantities that support economies of scale in production, we're doomed, right? If airplanes become the motorcycle equivalent, you know, the aviation equivalent of motorcycles, and like, you know, if you want an airplane built, you have to call someone like West Coast Choppers.
Yeah, right.
Right? If that was the only manufacturer of motorcycles, right? Motorcycling would not be this, you know, the community that it is, right? But that's what we're heading toward very quickly. You know, you've got folks building aircraft on production lines now. But those production lines don't look like motorcycle production lines or automobile production lines, right? They're they absolutely, if you look at the number of units sold per year, it's, you know, it really ties to, you want to make, you know, aviation cheaper? Great. Make aviation cheaper. It's not just about the fuel cost. Sure, the fuel cost is a big deal, but gosh, two-seat aircraft that cost over $100,000?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Right? Well, yeah, when you make like six of them.
Yeah.
Why is this surprising? You still need the same number of engineers. You still have to go through this massive you know, process to certificate. So why is everyone surprised that when you only make, you know, a couple of dozen airplanes a year, they're really expensive? Well, again, it's like West Coast choppers.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think back to the Eclipse, right? That was going to be the $1 million jet, and it just couldn't do it. Hence the reason people like Piper pulled out. They couldn't see the volume to bring the costs in line to make the economies of scale work for them.
Right. The R&D costs are just... I was actually thinking... It's funny that you mentioned that. I was thinking about that today. If you were to go out and try to start, you know, if you're making airplanes, you know, for... if Mark's airplane factory, right?
That was a secret. You weren't supposed to know about
darn
that.
It. But you know what would it take? What kind of investment? What, you know, it would just be so astronomically expensive to go out from scratch right now as a startup or an entrepreneur to go out and start designing and building and producing and selling aircraft.
Well, for the most part, people have given up. I will say there's some really good ideas out there as far as driving down the cost of ownership of new aircraft.
Yeah.
Tom Bliss from Avweb is working on this remanufacturing program that with the idea that you could start remanufacturing 172s and have like new aircraft for actually reasonable costs of acquisition, right?
Right.
You know, he's talking about 172s for, you know, $150,000 that
nice.
Are, you know, shiny and new and have that new airplane smell, right? I mean that would be kind of a big deal, right? And I love that. And maybe that's the stepping stone, right? It's kind of like going to Mars by reestablishing a moon base.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but if Tom can and the consortium of really smart people that he's sort of pulling together to make the remanufacturing and you know thing work, where flight schools and individuals can buy really nice airplanes for reasonable dollar amounts by going down the remanufacturing amount, maybe that then pulls in enough people and enough owners and grows the community to the point where the OEMs could start building aircraft in larger. You know, in larger volumes, so that we can drive down the cost per unit, right? Because,
right.
Our friends at Cessna, I love them, and their new diesel 182 is fabulous.
That's cool,
but it's spendy.
Yeah, well, and even in our club, we have that Dakota. It's not remanufactured; we'll call it refurbished, new paint, new interior, right. New engine. You know, you just go down the line with a warranty on the engine, and that feels new, and it wasn't that much.
And I don't point the fingers at the OEM. I don't fault Cessna for having to make a profit on selling an airplane.
Of course not.
Right? And Piper and Diamond and Cirrus as well. I don't fault them for, you know, needing to pay their engineers and pay their, you know, their factory workforce. And make a profit every time they sell an airplane. I don't fault the OEMs, and I don't even really fault the FAA, right? The FAA wants to keep things safe and all that. Honestly, I gotta point to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? The community who decided that, you know, that, you know, private aviation, the idea that I'm gonna fly myself for my own purposes, whether it's business or pleasure, right? It's that, you know, it's those people who said, I'd rather go spend my money on a boat or on a Harley or on whatever. And, you know, and then we all, you know, throw our hands up in the air and wail that, you know, it's too expensive to buy an airplane.
Right.
Well, how many airplanes have you bought lately?
Yeah.
And I say you, with a capital, you know, Y in the entire community.
I was talking about the...
It's simply economics.
Exactly, but there is a change in the demographic today, the younger demographic. I was talking to a guy I work with, and he was kind of commiserating. I was talking about the pilot population and people's lack of interest in aviation. He said, hey, I'm a car guy. You know, he collects T-Birds. And he says, you don't hear kids talking about it. They go out and buy inexpensive little neons or whatever they're selling today, but he says the buzz that we had about GTOs, or we called them goats back then, and all those, it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, here's a big sort of macro, not to make this all about me, but I'm going to do it again. I am a pilot after all.
And he's talking in that low pilot voice.
You know, but one of the things that inspired Open Airplane is one of these big sort of cultural shifts that's going on, mm-hmm. and that is that access to a good is becoming more valued than ownership of the good, right? I don't need to own a car if I can rent one. I don't need to own a house if I can rent an apartment and then, you know, move anytime I want, right? And I don't need to own an aircraft if I can have access to them, right? So the idea that I was a car guy and I needed to own a car or multiple cars because the only way I could enjoy those cars is if I owned them is just not part of the DNA of, you know, of you know, younger folks.
Right.
It's, you know, it's,
you but
know,
you recognize that, and that's been my big issue that you've heard me bring up over many, many shows is there are challenges out there, and we're trying to address them in the old way, and it's not...
Right.
It won't
why,
work.
Why can't these people be more like me and my parents? Darn it. Well,
exactly.
You know, guess what? That's not how it's going to be, right? So stop trying to save, you know, what used to be. In fact, adapt to what's going to be, and you're going to get a lot farther.
I got to hand it to Icon that they're forming a relationship with Cirrus to do the body work of their thing. So, again, to get some economies, I don't have to do it. Why don't I use you, Cirrus?
Sure.
And I think that's going to benefit us as well. And actually, I love that airplane. I'd love to have
that one. Oh, absolutely.
Now, imagine if you could rent one when you're on vacation.
As soon as you get into seaplanes,
see,
or amphibs.
That's the thing. Yeah, we've had those conversations. You know, it's like there is no such thing as a seaplane rental.
No, there's...
Right. I mean, there's like, you know, literally like... I could lose a couple of fingers and still count on one hand the number of places that have open rental of seaplanes. Actually, you know, the seaplane rating, pretty awesome, looks like a lot of fun. Absolutely nothing more than a vanity plate, if you will, for yeah. most people to stick on their
should I tell them
on
now
their, on their pilot
what you
certificate.
Did just a few weeks ago?
No, well, no, I think that's
your vanity.
Yeah,
he got it. Just got a seaplane rating.
It came in the mail yesterday.
Oh,
it honestly it did.
I want to see it.
They had a
okay.
But,
so what are you going to do with it?
Well, that's the thing. Is that it was a bachelor party. That's really all of it was. We went down as a bachelor
that's
party.
That's the most awesome bachelor party I've ever heard of.
But they had. But it was funny that you mentioned that because in the training. That was a big hot button issue. They said, hey, you know, the only way that you're going to stay proficient is if you come back down here and you fly with an instructor and all that. There's a guy down there that's had a seaplane rating for 10 years and he had 8 hours of seaplane time. And he lived in Europe and, you know, every once in a while he'd have a Orlando trip, and he'd come back down and, you know, get proficient again.
Yeah, they look like a blast. I have zero experience with them, but we know that, you know, I've had conversations with guys at Icon, and you know, I like I said, I love the idea that, you know, one day a seaplane rating might be more than a vanity plate.
Yeah.
Or you could always buy your own.
Well, that's what people do. And, in fact, when they buy their own, they go and they fly it for the first 50 hours uninsured. Because
right.
they can't get insurance on, you know, and so they just buy it and they just sort of hope like heck they don't, you know, they don't sink it, you know, until they get enough hours to be able to, you know, afford the insurance on it. It's really screwed up.
Yeah.
But,
is, yeah.
you know, it's a super awesome sort of part of aviation. I mean, every time I watch like, you know, a seaplane on the Discovery Channel or something and I'm just like, oh, that would be awesome. I totally want to do that. Oh yeah. Not really. I mean, I live on a lake. You know, for all intents and purposes, this should be easy.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, maybe that's phase two. We'll figure that
phase
out.
Phase two. We'll look.
Hey,
I
would love you'd have another. You'd have a guaranteed customer right here.
Oh, you might as well start a business.
Yeah, there you go. Someone go do this.
Yeah.
So, guys, thank you so much for the opportunity to be. I've got to pull chocks.
So do we. We've only got looks like 2 minutes. I was just going to open up the phone lines, and I looked up at the clock, and it was oh my goodness.
Yeah. Right.
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, Rod Rakic, we have really enjoyed the conversation, and judging by the level of activity we've seen on the internet and the tweets and all, so has our listening audience.
Thank you very much for coming on. You've had a long day. You deserve to go
a
home.
Long week.
Yeah, a long week and all that. And, you know, the one thing that resonates with us is, you know, your passion that comes out when talking about Open Airplane. And you know, when you and I have met up another time, and, you know, just that was awesome just to hear somebody so passionate about aviation and actually wanted to do something to make it a little bit different.
Well, I'm excited because you, like the other people that we've talked to recently, especially, are changing the industry. And to avoid all the doom and gloom we just talked about, it's going to take people like you and all these other people that believe in what we've got here and are going to set out to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really important. So
thank you. And you can go to sleep now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you for your Civil Air Patrol duties. We appreciate, I know all the people that you helped out there in the Northeast after the tough time they've had also appreciated it.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, absolutely. Well,
so, Al, actually, real quick, we got to plug next week's show.
Absolutely. We've got another exciting show next week. We're having Dave Pasco, the founder of LiveATC.net. He's going to be joining us.
Dave's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be great having him on. And
I love LiveATC. I listen to it all the time.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some weird people out there. I shouldn't say that because I may have offended just someone just now. But LiveATC, I think, is part of every pilot's realm.
All love it. Bookmark it.
So let it be written. Actually, for many people may not know, at Palwaukee, Chicago Executive, Papa Whiskey Kilo, call it what you may. The LiveATC.net feed comes from our little clubhouse.
Yeah.
In Hangar 5, up on the second floor. So that's where it's coming from. So we're a participant.
Absolutely.
We're a partner.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So we got him coming up the week after that. John Fiskus of the Flight Academy out in Seattle is going to be joining us. And we got some other guests lined up. Pretty much for the rest of the year, we just got to organize who's going when, and all that. But it should be really exciting.
I'm excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So anyway, thank you, everybody. Unfortunately, it's once again it has to happen once a week, but it's my least favorite time of the entire week.
2200 local time.
2200. Ugh. Yuck.
Yeah, okay, I know. Now it's now it becomes Monday. Although I'm looking forward to Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for joining us and interacting with us on Facebook, email, Twitter, text message, all that.
And we'll do the phone dials in next week, we promise.
Absolutely.
We'll start earlier.
Yes, but anyway, hopefully you have a great flying week. And until next week,
blue skies
and tailwinds.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.